We are broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, the home of WILL AM, FM, and TV, made possible by a gift from Alice and Robert Campbell. Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone call-in program. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad you could listen today. During this hour, we will talk about children's health, something we do once a month, with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician from Christie Clinic in Champaign. He's been doing the show for quite some time, so those of you listening, I'm sure, are familiar with Dr. Bocek. This is your chance to call in with your questions about the health and development of infants and young children. All of that is fair game for us during this hour. If you'd like to join our conversation and ask Dr. Bocek anything, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if that makes it any easier to dial. Also, we have a toll-free line anywhere you can hear us around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states where our signal travels, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Dr. Bocek, good morning.
Good morning. It's a beautiful morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's absolutely beautiful. Well, this we'll be experiencing a little bit colder temperature soon, but this is pretty nice.
Can we take the program out to the garden area that's finished? It's beautiful.
We're working on it.
Okay.
We're applying for FCC approval to do that. So we actually have a listener waiting. Do you want to dive right in? And I'm not sure where this person is calling from, but they're on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi, I'm calling from Urbana.
Okay.
And I've been waiting for a few weeks to be able to ask the question about autism. I've got a limited experience with autism from whatever I've seen on the news, magazine shows, on TV. I've had my child have a child with mild autism in school. And now my question is, I believe that I have a family member in my extended family that might have a child with mild case of autism. And I don't know that I can validate my opinion. I think it's tough when it might possibly be a mild case. And I thought maybe I could ask you about maybe four symptoms and maybe get some information from you. Is that okay?
Boy, yeah, no, yes, no. We'll give it a stab.
Okay. The child is, I think, 5 years old, and I've had this impression since the time he's two. He tends to gear himself towards repetitive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lower cognitive ability. He's been slower at speech. He has a strong aversion to anything new. Even to the point where if you were to take him to a fabulous water park geared for young children, instead of exploring all the things that there are to explore, he saw some water shooting out of the ground and would go to this water shooting out of the ground, 4 out of 4 days, and not be interested in looking or seeing anything else. And if you were to, and if the parents were trying to, just sort of sweep them up in the arm and say, oh, let's go try something new and look at this, and it just, he'd almost scream. And I've been seeing this type of thing, every 6 months. I don't see him more often than that, but every 6 months. And every single time I just have this feeling inside, but I don't know, I can't say anything because, man, if I'm wrong, I'm going to have definite, problems with the parents, and if I say something because I'm concerned that I want them to get attention for the child, I got to be better than 50% chance being right. What can you do to help me?
Probably nothing. I guess I'm confused about what autism is. Autism, when I was in training, was the kid who sat in the corner and played with, stacked blocks and unstacked blocks and stacked blocks and unstacked blocks and couldn't get along with anybody, and had poor to no verbal communications. And now autism doesn't exist anymore. It's now called pervasive developmental disorder. But this child certainly sounds like, fits some of the criteria for pervasive, for PDD. is certainly of concern. Now, do we have good, you know, the treatment for autism, PDD, is basically sort of an educational therapy. I mean, we don't have any medication or surgery or any real good medical treatment for it at all. And I think what it boils down to is how severe is this child and how can we help this child function in society? You know, how can we make them independent livers? How can we help to make them taxpayers is really sort of what we want to do. Yeah, how can we help this child become an independent liver, responsible for them, for themselves and for their, you know, their checkbooks and all that sort of, those sorts of things, making their mortgage payments, making their car payments. And certainly the milder the autism, the more likely it's these kids will function well. To the most severe, the child who rocks in the corner and you just can't quite, you know, get through to it all. But this child is certainly, this child you're talking about certainly is alarming to me that, yeah, things just aren't right there.
And you call this pervasive developmental disorder now?
Yeah, PDD.
Okay.
And certainly autism, when I was in training, was the child who rocked in the corner and seemed to be not in contact with the world. And now the definition, I think now we see a whole spectrum of this from it's being diagnosed more and more. And I think what's happening is the milder kids who were just a little eccentric in the past now are given a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. I am very child-centered, and if it were me, I would want to know. There are not all people feel that way, but I feel like it's the right thing to do to suggest that maybe this could be explored, because I feel like the parents might have a better understanding and not be so frustrated that their child is not learning as fast as someone else. Do you have any suggestions of how you make a suggestion to the parents that they inquire this of their doctor? Do you have any advice you can give me?
I guess I think my way of approaching anything like that is to be forthright and say, gee, I've got these concerns. You know, I've read about it, I've had experience with it, and your child's manifesting some of the symptoms. And I guess it depends on how well you know these people.
I know the parents extremely well.
Okay. You're good friends with them.
It's my brother's child.
Okay. Then I think I'd probably be forthright and honest. And this child is 5 years old?
Yeah.
Okay. So this child's starting school this year? Or is in school, is in kindergarten this year?
In kindergarten.
Okay.
And I don't think that the parents are as in tune to child development and needs as they could be. Of course, now I'm off on the other spectrum. I'm a former teacher, and you know, child development's like real important to me. So
the school system will probably spit this child out, too, to the parents, saying, you know what? This child is not a good match for school. There's problems going on here. So I think the time is coming soon. If you don't call their attention to it, the school will say, this child isn't kind of wired right. You know, just doesn't fit doesn't match with their colleagues in school, and we need to do something. But then I think it behooves, and if you feel comfortable, I'd broach it with them, because I think what then happens is it's not the parents' problem, it's not the school's problem, it's everybody who's in contact with this child's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then the IEP comes out, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take close work between the school or the school, the educational facility, the teacher and the parents to share what works best with this child, what therapeutic modalities, behavioral modalities and that they're going to try with this child. So everybody's sharing, you know, this works, this doesn't work. We've never tried that. Yeah, let's be consistent. We'll do this we'll do these behavioral techniques at home just like we will in school. And so we'll be consistent with the child, because these kids, like you mentioned, they have their, they tend to persevere in behaviors. Mm-hmm. How can you get them involved with what's going on in the world instead of them being fascinated with the water coming out of the drinking fountain? Say, how can we break these habits? How can we get this child involved in the class and integrated in society better, and making friends? Because I think, yeah, we want this child hopefully to become a taxpayer, to be capable of independent living and managing their own affairs as best as possible. And I think it's going to take rather intensive work, and it's going to need to be cooperative work between the teachers, the family, grandparents, kind of everybody who has contact with this child. So they're sort of all on the beam together and consistent and communicating with one another. You know, we've done this sort of behavioral modification for 3 months now, and we're seeing nothing. It's time to reconvene and talk about, what are we going to try next, and what behavior is going to work. And I broach this with the parents. If you feel comfortable, and I think I'd be forthright and honest, I think that works the best. Mm-hmm. They may be angry with you for a while, or probably deny it for a while, because, again, you know, you talk about grief, and I think when somebody realizes that their child isn't what they anticipated, there's a certain amount of, you go through all the grief thing, you know, all the grief processes, and denial is certainly one of them. But I think sooner or later they're going to have to face the fact that their child is not like other children and is going to require some special care.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that input.
You're welcome. I hope I helped.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Bye. Just a quick follow-up. Is there a hereditary genetic component to
ADD?
Yeah.
The PDD?
PDD.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. The other thing that occurs to me is that I've heard autism, or as we're calling it, pervasive development disorder now, that a child's brain is wired differently. That doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't as intelligent. In fact, in some ways, they may possess an extraordinary intelligence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, I think you had
Howard Gardner was multiple intelligence theorist. His work partially addresses that and other things as well. But, you know, the idea being that there are different types of intelligence, and in extreme cases of, for example, PDD, it may be expressed in a way that a child may not be able to care for him or herself as other children can, but may have some particular area where they are literally a genius. But as you suggest, it's difficult necessarily, you know, for that child to fit into so-called normal society and balance checkbooks and so forth.
Yeah, how do we best help these children develop the gifts they've got? And how do we best make this square try and round this square peg out a little bit so they do fit and function in society a little bit better? This child probably will never be an insurance salesman or somebody like that, but might do very well as a computer programmer or something where they can not be bothered so much by, not be forced into working with big numbers of people, but they can sit with their computer terminal. And society certainly needs these people. I mean, it's not that they'd be worthless at all. We just need to, they're going to require a lot of individual attention by the parents and the educational system to help them develop the gifts and strengths they have.
Well, very good. We have three other callers waiting. Let's go on and talk with them. And I'll just mention again, we're talking with Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician from Christie Clinic in Champaign, doing our monthly program on children's health. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. Next up, a listener in Peoria on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Bocek.
Good morning.
In our neighborhood, we have a little boy. He must be maybe 7 or 8, and they say that he has dyslexia. Is there any treatment, and how does it affect this little boy?
Okay. Dyslexia is defined as difficulty with reading. And it's kind of a term that's disappearing, too, just as autism is. And it sounds like often in medicine, when we aren't making any real progress, we'd like to change the name of things. But what it's going to mean, again, for this child is it's an educational problem. How can we help a non-reader learn? And it's not the fact that they're non-readers. It's just that reading is very difficult for them. They don't enjoy it because it is so hard. And so how do we educate these kids? And I think an obvious answer is if this child has a great deal of difficulty reading, let's work with reading. Let's help him the best he can to develop this skill. But in the meantime, while reading's a problem for him, why don't we read to him? Because often these children are good auditory learners. They just can't. Reading is difficult for them. So let's read the books to them. Let's read their textbooks to them. And it's going to take a lot of time. The schools have Title I reading and that, so they'll be helped that way. But it's going to again take parent dedication. And sometimes if the school won't or is slow about providing the necessary services, it's going to take parent advocacy to make sure that this child gets the best educational help possible. The other good thing about dyslexia is it tends to improve with age. So the prognosis for the dyslexic, for the child with reading difficulty, isn't awful. With time, they tend to get better. The other thing is that many kids, it's developmental. A lot of kids just aren't reading ready till about age 7 or so. So some of the kids who have trouble with reading in kindergarten, first and second grade, will turn on in third grade or some other time. So it's not a dyslexia need not be a terrible thing to have at all. And sometimes you just have to kind of weather things and circumvent things until the brain matures, if you will, and reading becomes fun and the reading skills improve.
No medical treatment at all.
There's no medical treatment. You know, I think is medically what we need to do is assure ourselves that this child does have adequate vision, that there's no physiologic problem preventing this child from reading that we can, you know, intervene and do anything about. But no, there's no medication that's going to help.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to a listener in Aurora on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I need a all-encompassing answer to a 8-year-old granddaughter who recently moved into the area. She's very homesick, and I can understand that, and I try to be as empathic as I can, but I still have the feeling that this child has to know that this is the way the world is, and maybe home is going to be like she wants it to be if she controls it like she does, but that's not the real world.
Okay.
I guess I'm trying to be a loving, firm grandparent, and she's very controlling, and she's very, you know, domineering. She wants what she wants. She wants to eat her lunch, supper in the living room with the TV on, you know, and all that. Well, she's never going to learn what foods other people are eating unless she sits at the table and sees it, because her eating, the food she eats are very, you know, I don't say anything about the food she eats. I just put what I think are the correct fruits and vegetables on the table, and if she eats it, okay. If she doesn't, that's up to her. But I think she needs to observe that other people do eat carrots, that other people do eat an apple, you know, all
yeah.
those things. She has to see it to learn it. And if she's in front of the TV, she won't. So what I want to know, what I want for you, Dr. Bocek, is an impossible answer to her when she is demanding, if she is controlling, and I still want to be a firm and loving grandparent. Her mother kind of gives in to her, I think, but I don't say that because they have their world to live in, and I know, you know, parenting is a learning thing, and you don't learn everything in the first 8 years.
What's she homesick for, I guess, is one question I have. Why did she move into this area? Because usually at age...
Because she's a child of divorce. And,
okay.
And the home there was not... my daughter needed... She needed family to help her with monies and, yeah, and everything else that leads to a better life. Yeah. Her lifestyle down there, she had excellent job. Excellent job. That down in Indiana, but she had to move up here because things were not good for her there as far as getting an assist from the child's father, et cetera, et cetera. This is a better area. You know, her family really helps in many ways, emotionally, physically, monetarily. You know, it's all there for her, and like she keeps saying, I could never do this if it wasn't for my family.
Yeah. This child's not homesick. This child's grieving.
Grieving?
She's grieving. She's grieving for something that, something lost.
Yes, yes. This,
yeah,
this is why I'm trying to be very delicate about it, and I don't want to come down hard.
And I think, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think what this child needs is a lot of love.
But she won't let you get near her.
That's
you
right.
You cannot hug her. You can't touch her.
She's,
you know,
grieving and she's angry.
She's, yes.
And her father, whom she dearly loved, and I don't know what this guy was like. He may have been the worst, you know, he may have been the worst person in the world, may not have been. But anyway, the family's broken up.
Yes.
And she loved him, and all of a sudden she doesn't have his, he's not around anymore. He's not in the picture.
Well, he wasn't, though. That was one of the reasons she left, because he didn't add. He not only didn't add, he subtracted.
Yeah, but this child says, you know, I'm supposed to have a mommy and a daddy.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't.
Yes.
And I think it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing I'd tell you is pick your battles. And
yes,
I agree with...
I know that from this little list I have of grandmother things. You have to pick your battles.
Yeah.
And I
would suggest that perhaps right now her eating dinner in front of the TV is not the battle to pick right now. I think in the future it may very well be.
I just said to my daughter, I think if she eats with us, she sees the food that we eat and everybody is eating, and not just 4 pieces of bread and 3 glasses of milk. I did say she cannot drink at my house more than two glasses of milk with her meal.
I
did put my foot down, because if she's going to drink milk, she's not going to eat any food.
That's right, and she's on a very iron-deficient diet. So she's not on a healthy diet. So I agree. You know, I think maybe the approach I'd take is, it sounds like the approach you're taking, go ahead and eat in the living room in front of TV. At this point in time, we will work on getting you integrated to the dinner table later, but right now I will focus on your health, because eating 4 slices of bread and 2 glasses of milk 3 times a day is not adequate nutrition. So I will take care of your health needs first. I will be loving and patient, and we will not work on TV, because I have a hunch she's been eating dinner in front of the TV for 8 years. Probably all her life. Or what she's doing is saying, you know, Daddy rejected me. I'm not going to get close to anybody because it hurts to be rejected.
You think that is what compels her to do that? Really?
Could be, or it could be that with the parents not getting along, that she was allowed to eat in front of TV and eat.
Oh, yes, my daughter said that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's, I think what you might say is, okay, you will load your plate at the dinner table. I'd sure like you to sit at the dinner table and tell me about what happened in school today.
Oh, you can't get that out of her. You can't.
Yeah.
I've tried for 3 weeks now. See, that's the other thing that I think eating at the dinner table does. It prompts conversation.
Absolutely.
You get some information from her or impart some information to her.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one place, and I just love dearly dogs. I love them. And they did get a puppy.
Okay.
And it has been a plus. Saturday afternoon, some way or another, when my daughter was resting, because she really is tired. You know, this is all, the last month has been a big strain
yeah.
on her.
Well, your daughter's grieving, too. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of grief going on there.
Yes, and somewhere or another, the dog chewed a can of mace and maced itself.
Ouch.
And so my daughter was sleeping. Her daughter woke her up, you know, and said something happened to the dog, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the thing the daughter says was, let's go over to Grandma. She'll know. They live next
yeah.
door. She'll know what to do. So when they came and I said, call the animal hospital, et cetera, we artificial tears the water dog's eyes. We put cold compresses on, and we got her back to normal.
Yeah.
And then I said to my daughter when everything was over, which is hindsight is great, I said, you know, we really both should have read the back of the capsule. That would have told us what to do. But we did everything anyway, you know.
Yes.
But it was such a thing. So now I'm preparing for the next thing to happen with the puppy. And I'm finding where there's an animal hospital that's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
But you know what? You told me two things. And the most important thing I think you told me is you are making good progress with your granddaughter, because your granddaughter, when the going got tough for this poor puppy, call Grandma. I trust Grandma. Grandma will know. So I think you are making good strides with your granddaughter, and I think you are appearing to her as somebody who is constant and somebody she can trust.
Well, the other thing I did, I said, I will pay you 50 cents a week if you, I'm a bird watcher, if you fill my bird feeder up.
Okay.
So she does that, and she gets paid for it.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know what, I don't, if you forgot the 50 cents, I'll bet it wouldn't make any difference.
Because well, 50 for last week, I didn't have enough change.
And she's still filling the bird feeder.
Yes.
Because 50 cents isn't important. I think it's pleasing Grandma that's important to her. 50
I
cents.
I wish I felt as yeah. positive about that as you do.
No, you're making progress, but it's going to be a long, it's going to be a slow process.
Yeah, I really, that's how I feel about it, a year or two. But so there's nothing I can say. I'm better off saying nothing. You know, like I'd like to say an empathic thing, like, you know, I wish she would talk to me about school, but kids don't. Evidently, they're just yeah. glad to be out, and they don't want to rehash it.
Well, I think then the other, you know, maybe there's nothing to talk about in school. Maybe everything's going well, and I think
no, it isn't. It's going disastrous.
Okay.
See, and that's why I think yeah. maybe she really doesn't want to talk about it.
Then you or her mother has to be in contact with the school.
Oh, yes. My sister, her mother is a teacher, so her mother
okay.
knows what to do.
Okay, great. Because
yes, I think the child is very fortunate that she has a mother that's there for her. You know, she really is. What I'm asking is what can I say that would, like I said at the beginning, would be an all-encompassing statement that would let her see me as a friendly person. The way she looks at me, like I'm an enemy. I just really hate to see the way she looks at me, you know. And I just think, yeah, I haven't done anything that I know of. But I still want to give her some discipline. You know, I think she needs to know the world the way it really is.
Not yet. Not today. Slowly.
Uh-huh. I did.
She's only 8 years old. She doesn't need to know how the world is till she's out working and paying taxes again. I hate to bring up the tax thing. I don't know what that's all about. But I think, you know, she doesn't need to grow up today. She doesn't need to grow up tomorrow. She needs to grow up over the next few years. And I think, you know, if this eating in front of TV, well, that's something she's learned over 8 years. And I think she's also, because of the divorce and that, sort of learned a mistrust. You know, I don't want to get too close to people because they tend to disappear on me.
You know, I have to be honest and say I didn't think of that aspect. But when I said she has to learn what the real world is, I would like her, like, once a week or once every 2 weeks to set the table. I think the children have to learn that somebody has done this for them,
yeah.
and maybe it's their time to learn to set the table.
But I think, you know, she's learned to fill the bird feeder for you, and I'm not sure the 50 cents is significant. And I think what she's telling you is, you know, and with the dog and the mace incident, I think what she's saying is, you know, I think there's a person here I can trust. I'm not sure, but I think there's a person here I can trust. And I think as you approach it, you know, approach it slowly, I think it's going to develop.
What amazes me is how controlling she is.
Sure. Because it worked before, and I think often in divorce, a bunch of things happen. Certainly nothing, I don't think anything good happens. But I think what happened is, as her mom was going through the emotional trauma, she was probably not what we'd call an ideal mom. She had her own concerns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was probably easier for her to let the child eat in front of the TV than discuss it, handle it, set some limits and that sort of thing. So it just kind of happened. And it's a behavior this child's learned. And also, when I'm with TV, I'm not with people. I can trust TV. As long as the power is going, if I turn on TV, it's going to talk to me. Where I can't, you know, I've learned not to trust people because they come into my life. I identify with them. I think they're constant. All of a sudden, they disappear on me again. And it's going to take this child a while to learn that. Trust, at least there's certain people, like Grandma, that I can trust.
Well, the thing is that she did write to her dad, and he never answered.
Mm-hmm.
And she did try to call, and he never answered.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, her mother did get him, and they talked. But, so it's that kind of situation. I never thought of not trusting. I'm glad I called you that possibly she doesn't trust. So maybe that could be the thing that I could say sometime that, well, I'll do this for you and be positive about it and do it for her.
Yes.
And
hopefully she'll return. You know, yeah, Grandma's constant. Grandma I can trust. I'll do things back for her. And I think you've already, you know, that bird feeder, I think, is a terribly significant incident. The dog, call Grandma. Grandma will know what to do. I think that's a terribly significant statement she made.
I think the dog is a positive in her life because they are going to dog training, and I think when she sees that the dog has to go to school and learn, that will be a positive also. I think her mother's trying very hard to do all the right things, you know, the correct things to foster the child's emotional health, physical health.
And it's tough for mom, too. And
why she was sleeping. She finds herself exhausted at 2-3 o'clock and she has to nap.
Yeah, she is not a perfectly functional mom because, she got ripped up from her friends in Indiana. Her marriage fell apart. So she is not the mom she'd like to be either, although I don't think she's in any position probably right now to admit that. She's doing the best she can.
Oh, yeah, and she's job hunting.
Yeah.
And so far she's been overqualified the two
places
she went. So the job that's for her is going to be difficult to find. You know, it's not like you can just go to work someplace. She can't.
Yeah.
She's, like I said, she's overqualified, so it'll take time. So thank you much. And I'm glad I called you because I didn't think of it as grieving. I knew she was homesick. I know she wants the familiar. She wants her friend Joey, you know. She just wants, like she said, she wants to go back where they were. And I'm glad you called.
Yeah, she wants to go back where they were with mom and dad married again. And she wants what can ever be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good luck. Well, this is kind of a heavy morning on Focus.
This is.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's a very tough situation. But I think, you know, your statement that it's going to take time, I mean, that certainly rings true. Well, our lines are all full, and let's go on and talk with some more folks and see what's on their minds. Let me just also mention our guest this morning, Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician from Christie Clinic in Champaign. We're taking your questions on children's health. We have full lines, so we'll go on and talk next with a listener in Champaign on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a parent of an 8-year-old daughter, and I thought I heard the first caller, and I thought that I would share with you that when my daughter was young, I had some concerns about some of her behaviors, and was directed several times to the PDD possible condition, and to the point that a clinic had sent us information in regards to assessment. But I do want to share that my daughter was a highly verbal child and would probably have fit into the category of extremely intelligent. So she had no cognitive delays, and in fact she was quite advanced. She started reading at 20 months old, like a year and a half. 20 months mm-hmm. old, she started reading, but she was extremely sensitive and to new places. If we would just go to a brand new store, she'd have, at a very young age, under 2, have an extreme reaction, tantrum. She had to have things the same place. She wouldn't like it when I got a new outfit or if I got my hair cut. She would tantrum terribly. She was extremely sensitive, but she was extremely verbal and social. And
okay.
She wouldn't want to hurt anybody, and she understood. At 2 years old, she understood about, I know we were walking, and she asked me why a little boy was, why he was playing with a gun. And I said, well, that's not a real gun. And she goes, I know, but guns really hurt people. Why would he want to play with a toy one? 2 years old. So she is a self-chosen vegetarian. She not raised in a vegetarian home. She chose that before age 7. She found out about it herself and asked questions and researched, looked in the dictionary, and decided that that's what she wanted to do. She's 8 years old now. She's in a private school in an advanced grade, and socially she's doing fine. But one problem, we have never found an academically challenging program. When she was little, I really feel that she had a photographic memory. I don't know that it seems as evident now that of photographic memory, but she has a phenomenal memory, visually. A lot of times auditorily, she doesn't tune in or doesn't catch. You have to maybe talk louder, or she'll hear part of what you say. She really doesn't tune in auditorily, but
she's a visual processor.
But I wanted to know how, as far as I really haven't wanted to have an IQ assessment, but if we would decide to go that route in order to cut down on the problems of getting her into an advanced program, if it's a foreign language program, whatnot, because of her, just them looking at her age and that it's a problem just because they want to focus on her age rather than know that it's possible that she's actually even advanced over the program that they have, because that has happened before where she'll get into a program and she'll be helping 10 and 11-year-olds and she won't really get anything out of it. And I wonder if what you would recommend, Stanford Binet or a Welter, or would you just recommend us just struggling every time we want to? She has an interest in a program. But the reason why I shared the earlier information is because that in my daughter's case, we were constantly directed in that realm. And even with her early reading to, I think, a condition called hyperlexia, but she is very cognitively advanced, very. And so those areas did not fit, even though she had some of the behaviors and some of the sensitivity still lingers. But she's much better now that she's older.
Yeah. I'm not sure putting an IQ number on her will be of any great benefit. I think again, this is a situation where you want to be in close contact with the schools and be her advocate. These kids are, we're dealing with the square peg, and it's much easier to teach a class of 20 that are all at the same level. But that doesn't happen. We've got kids that are behind that have reading problems, and we've got children like yours that are, you know, reading at a 12th grade level or something like that, although she's in the...
Yes.
Chronologically, she's in the second or third grade.
Right, and she's in fourth grade in a private school right
now,
and it's still not challenging.
No, and but the other problem that comes up with these kids is socially she doesn't belong with fourth graders, perhaps.
No.
So these kids...
And she's very small for her age.
Yeah.
And that is a problem because physically she is very
delicate
and sensitive and non-aggressive, but then can get easily hurt.
Yeah, her cognizant level is at the fourth or fifth grade or something. And it's probably, besides that, it's mixed.
Right.
Maybe in math she's at third grade, and maybe in reading she's at eighth grade or something like that. So I think I feel sorry for the teachers to a certain extent, because this is a child who's really hard to... This is a demanding child on their talents.
Yes, I think people think advanced child, oh,
yeah,
they're going to be great for our classroom. I have no trouble, and I try to say that, you know, it's going to be just as challenging, if not more. You know, I try to let them know, because it's been hard for me. I really hate having to argue with educators, or when I say something that they don't take the weight of what I tell them until they're experiencing it, and then they're at a lack to, you know, when I say, well, she needs to move on and then let her progress through this grade and go on to the next, and they'll say that, but then when they get her in and she's doing the work, and that they don't want to let her get too far beyond the other students, because I think it would be much more difficult for them to work that up, have such a difference.
Yeah, the other problem they're dealing with is her social maturation. I don't know where her social maturation is. It's kind of unusual, too, because she's a very sensitive child. So, and
yes,
socially,
she
she's
a leader. She is a leader.
Yeah.
And she's very, I mean, she's very respectful.
But is she comfortable with fifth graders, or is she much more comfortable with second and third graders with her chronologic age group peers?
She tends to go toward a little bit older children, but she socializes with babies all the way through adults. She has been in adult groups, organizations, and been a part of the group, and presented a speech, you know, in an impromptu speech when you have to tell about your life, and she's blown people away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when she was 7 years old, she did that, and
yeah,
she was the only child in the group, and she told about her life.
Yeah.
And how she got there and what she was doing, and I, you know, she was attending with me. And she blew everybody away.
Yeah. So I think it behooves you to continue what you're doing, being a good advocate for her. And it's going to be, you're going to butt heads with this school on occasion, too.
Oh, I don't like that. That's a problem.
But I'm afraid that's what you're going to have to do in your daughter's best interest.
Okay.
And then do the best you can to add on to what the school does in outside activities.
That's fine. That I enjoy doing. We really enjoy doing a whole bunch of other things. So that's fine. So I thank you for you listening, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We have about 5 minutes left with Dr. Robert Bocek, and three callers waiting. We'll go on and talk with our next listener, actually two callers. Next up, Champagne, line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. There was a piece about a month ago in the Sunday magazine about a neurological disorder that I had never heard of called Asperger's or Berger's.
Okay. That's an autism variation. It's part of the PDD.
Okay.
And I can't remember the exact different... They're a little different than the usual PDD, and I can't remember exactly how their characteristics differ.
Okay, well, it talked about fixating on a particular subject to the point of obsession. And, you know, sometimes there's some ADD along with it. You know, similar kinds of symptoms, but...
In medicine, we talk about the splitters and the lumpers. And I think what's happened with PDD now is we've got the splitters. Well, these kids with Asperger's are a little different than the rest of the kids with PDD. So we're going to kind of split them out. And then some other people say, you know, PDD is PDD. It does have a spectrum, but we won't worry too much about the term Asperger's. We're going to kind of lump them all together with PDD. But I think the fact of the matter is all kids with PDD are a little bit different. They have their strengths, they have their weaknesses, they have their gifts, and then they have parts that need to be worked with a little bit more. So I think there is no individual therapy there's no program you can take all the kids with PDD or Asperger's syndrome or something and stick them all under. You have to give these kids, you have to individually assess them and individually have treatment plans, and I guess I shouldn't say treatment plans so much as educational plans for them.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here's an easy question, hopefully.
Oh, good.
Out of all this stuff, or maybe it's not so easy, but I have a child who's 5'1" now and about 95 pounds, and he wants to sit in the front with airbags, and I keep thinking, you're a little small for that yet. Is there some magic number at which he can do that?
Oh, gosh. This is not an easy... I don't know. I'm sure it's an easy question, but I don't know the answer.
Okay.
I guess he'd be kind of lumped in with the petite female type person and probably is still better off in the back seat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what I've been telling him. Just wait a little while.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. We have one other listener waiting and about 2 minutes left, so we'll get them in. This is a listener in Champaign, line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about chicken pox. I've heard.
Oh, thank you.
Vaccine. Well, it may not be as easy as you're hoping. I've heard you talk about the controversy of whether or not to give the vaccine, and I guess we're going in the direction of doing it now. And to me, it's always seemed like a no-brainer when I go out to the other end and think of all the devastation and permanent neurological damage and eye problems that can happen to an elderly person that gets shingles. Do we know if getting the vaccine for chickenpox and keeping it current, however many boosters it might take, wouldn't also prevent shingles later in life?
Okay. At this point in time, one or two doses of vaccine, depending on the age of the child, are all that's required. Boosters, there is no recommendation for boosters at this time, and I guess what I'll have to say is we're just going to have to hold tight over the years and see what happens to the titer. To the best of my knowledge, there's been no reported case of shingles in any child who's received, in any person who's been vaccinated with the chickenpox vaccine.
Then if you just keep up with maybe a recheck on titers and revaccinate as necessary, wouldn't that seem prudent?
Yes. And actually, there is no recommendation now that in the children we've vaccinated that we do repeated titers. The company that makes the vaccine, I understand, is following this up. The CDC or ACIP or some federal agency is also following this up, looking to see if boosters will be needed. You can bet your boots the company's following up because I'm sure they'd like to sell an extra dose of vaccine if a booster is needed. So at this point in time, no, titers are not recommended after the child receives the vaccine. And I think it's going to be just stay tuned and keep your regular doctor's visits. So, yeah, if and when the word comes out that boosters are needed, a booster will be appropriately given.
Well, this became an issue to me when I have a grown daughter who has never had chicken pox, who's childbearing age with an immune-suppressed system, and finally her doctors decided that it far outweighed the benefits of getting it, outweighed not getting it. And someone like that, you'd certainly want to see that they had protection their whole life if they possibly could, because getting the disease at a mature age and then maybe shingles could be really devastating.
Yeah, the disease tends to be much worse in adults. Now she's immune compromised.
I'm sorry. Okay. I had to put the call on hold because we're straying past our time. I'm really sorry to say that.
It is a live viral vaccine, and you want to be careful if you're immune compromised.
Yeah, and I apologize to that caller, but I'm going to get in trouble if I don't end the hour here. And we'll talk again next month.
Sure,
our guest, Dr. Robert Bocek, pediatrician from Christie Clinic, and thanks once again.
Thank you.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Linda Sheets of REMAX Realty Associates, specializing in distinctive homes, a professional broker serving the needs of buyers and sellers in the Champaign-Urbana. Urbana area. Linda invites you to join her in supporting public broadcasting. When we return in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with writer Orson Scott Card. First, we'll take a break for some news and a market update.